Hi, this is Santi Tosino, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Series 5, Episode 29 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, and Russ Brooks this evening. Jim, Loz, and Snowy otherwise engaged, but we're hoping to have everyone back in the next couple of weeks for at least a few weeks before the end of the season, before Loz jets off again on holiday, etc. But we will get the gang fully back together very soon. We will be talking about Gloucester's quarterfinal win over the Ospreys, the semi-final to come against Benetton Treviso, plus all the other European action at the weekend, and kind of what we expect for the next couple of weeks in Gloucester's season. But we will start, Russ, with the breaking news as we record this evening on the Monday, 15th. I mean, to be fair, I only told you like 3 minutes ago, so not had a huge amount of time to react to this.
About it now, yeah.
But Geordie Barrett, half decent, as signing for Leinster next season on a short-term deal. That seems excessive. I don't know about you, mate. I think it's not as if they're struggling.
No, they're not. It kind of shows. I mean, my first thoughts are, what a signing, what a great player, and what it'll be nice that we get to see him playing over here in Europe and, you know, see how he adapts to the game and all of that. But you're also thinking, why do Leinster need him? It'll be interesting because he's a very different player to the kind of player game they play. Although, you know, credit where it's due, they really opened up at the weekend, didn't they? I mean, you were there, you can talk about that. They played some cracking rugby. But yeah, it'd just be, I mean, how mismatched can they be? And it's showing how big that gulf is opening between, well, the Irish teams, and Leinster especially just seem to have more to play with than any other Irish team, but French rugby as well. I mean, you know, with the salary cap, quite rightly as it is, it just makes it hard for English teams to compete. a few years ago.
Yeah. But that's a really good point, Russ. And actually, I think it quite helpfully leads us on to probably we'll do it this way around. We'll talk about European rugby, the quarterfinals more generally first, and then we'll come on to Gloucester in the second part of the pod. But it brings us on nicely in an era where English teams are significantly underpowered in terms of the salary cap. Quite rightly, I think we have to be sensible about how we manage the finances of the English game. To have two semi-finalists in a year where there are a lot of very good sides with a lot of very good players available, playing exciting and expansive rugby, I think that's there's a lot of doom and gloom around English rugby, and to have the likes of Northampton and Harlequins in those semi-finals is a good thing. The only shame is really they're probably, if we're realistic about this, two away games against the two best teams in the competition. It's going to be very difficult for them to get to the final.
It is, but like you said, Ed, you've got to take two teams in the semis is a good reflection of English rugby. Frustration, it almost comes onto that philosophical how they play rugby. Is it a coincidence that it's two sides not afraid to play rugby that are in the semis? I don't know. I mean, Exeter got absolute pasting, didn't they? You know,
but they were playing really good rugby for the first 20 minutes.
I mean, I think you said it in the group. So I really wish Gloucester played like Northampton because they're not doing anything. What's frustrating is they're not doing anything fancy. And I could see how Gloucester could play a game plan that. A few aggressive carries. We've got players of similar style. I'm not saying we're anywhere like that at the moment. Northampton are a level above in that way they're playing. But it's the options out the back, isn't it? There are times you look at their back line and then they've got forwards in positions outside. As a defender, it must be a nightmare because you cannot guess where they're going. And it's so nice to see. I mean, they had a pretty easy run of it with the balls in the previous round, in the quarters. Not that I'm sorry, the Bulls can get in the sea crying about having to do what they actually, you know, oh, South Africa wanted to come and join in, and now they're moaning about the travel. Edinburgh traveled to South Africa, and I haven't heard a complaint from them.
No.
But another argument. But just the way they play, I mean, against Munster, they were ridiculous, weren't they? Any, you know, and that was a hard game. Munster played quite well. So, and then what I saw of the Quins Bordeaux game was just, you know,
oh, ridiculous. I mean, it was utterly ridiculous. I mean, you just don't see those. You just didn't see that result really coming.
And they're two sides playing without fear as well. So I don't think they'll be daunted by... They've got nothing to lose, have they?
No.
I could see maybe one of them maybe pulling off something special. The odds are two. I mean, it'd be amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing with Quins, can we have Finn Baxter? Because what a prop he is. I don't know if you saw, like, he came on and he pretty much destroyed their scrum on their own. I've been a fan for ages, but to just deliver at that level. So, you know, as fancy rugby as they played, it was nice as a prop to see someone come along and remind us what propping's all about.
Yeah,
he can play as well.
He can. I mean, I suppose the difficulty with the Northampton result versus the Quins result. So the Quins result was just an outstanding victory against a fully loaded Bordeaux team, more or less. Ain Bordeaux, and you know, to do what Quins did, and you also got to bear in mind they were trailing with, 6 minutes to go or whatever it was. So they to come back and take the lead, then sort of hang on those last 2-3 minutes after Bordeaux missed a conversion. It takes a lot of to beat Bordeaux at home. I mean, as we know, Gloucester, the last team to beat them at home in Europe. But I just think that showed, I think, a lot. There's a lot of maturity there. They had some players out as well. They weren't, you know, I think what's his face, Marler wasn't playing, was he? Was injured. So that was impressive. The Northampton one is difficult to judge because Bulls came with a weird side, massively reduced in terms of who they could pick, who they were picking from. So it's quite a difficult one to judge. But you're beating a South African side who are doing all right. They're going quite well.
And the level they did it at as well. They still played some good rugby. They've got so many good players. And like I said, I watched the whole of the Munster game, and you were just like, wow.
Yeah, that was a different level, wasn't it?
I mean, to bring a player like Hendy on.
Yeah.
Who played? I mean, that was his one try was one of the best finishes I've seen in a long time. Right in the
second, the first one or the second? Well, the second the one, second when he steps one,
I mean, both of them were good, but the second one where he steps and then finishes, and it's two, I can't remember who it is. It's Crowley, and I think it might even be Zebra. So it's not bad people that he's beaten there. So, and that's that he's coming off the bet. Their back line is just ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, Odendall and Dingwall in the center, Freeman, Slight Home. I mean, Furbank, I'm not a big fan of internationally, but he plays so well at that level. And he's not even playing at the moment. You know, they've got some great, and I love their 9-10. Mitchell Smith is superb, aren't they? So, yeah, I think I love Quins. I love how Quins play, but I think Northampton have got the makings. If they play it right, they could be a very good side for a long time.
Yeah, because they've got a lot of youth there as well, and you know, it's good. I mean,
they've got a good pack.
Well, that's the thing. So that it's going to be a very different experience for Northampton at Croke, because that's the sort of X factor here. I would have probably said at the Aviva, you never know. It's not to win at Thomond and all the rest of it, and they've done that. I just think that the Croke Park factor, 80,000 people. I mean, you know, 95% of it is going to be Leinster, and I do wonder whether that's just going to put an extra bit against Northampton. Northampton's pack could cause Leinster some problems.
And you know, Laws always turns up for the big games, doesn't he? I mean, he still when he wants to turn it on, he shows what.
Well,
what
I think he's wanted to do it all season because he's. Yeah, for me, he's been player of the season.
Yeah, and they've still got other great players in that pack. I think, you know, Ludlam, Graham in the backs, they're very solid. I think if any English team can do it, it's them at the moment.
Yes, they seem to be able to take the chances as well, don't they?
And they're not afraid to play from deep, and they can. That's the difference, isn't it? They're not chucking it around. You can back them to do it, and their ball retention's good. So we'll see. But I mean, you know, Leinster were very impressive against La Rochelle. They move that pack around. And I think I'm not the biggest fans of Leinster. I'll always be honest about that, but I think what impressed me about them was that evolution of their game plan. Like they moved that La Rochelle pack around well. So they are clearly a team that's evolving their game now. And I mean, you know, Jordy Barrett, it's not, you know, they are a good side. It is, and like you say, it does sound like sour grapes, and it is a little bit that it does not help when these teams have just got unlimited resources.
Yeah, it doesn't help. I mean, just the one thing on the Leinster, so being in the stadium on Saturday, I mean, first of all, for all the criticism of Leinster as a team, I mean, obviously it's an extension of the IRFU, but the way they did that, the way they kind of got, you know, it was packed out in a week. It was 10. I mean, I paid 10 euros a ticket for the tickets for me and my mates. And we were right at the back of the stand. It couldn't be any higher, but it was great view, great atmosphere. Everyone around us was enjoying themselves. It wasn't, I have to be honest, it wasn't that same situation when you go to a lot of games, big games, where you're just up and down all the time, grabbing it, you know, we're going to the toilet and with beers and stuff. So that was good. And you made the point there, Russ, about how they moved that La Rochelle team around really from the first kickoff. They moved them around. They kind of tired them out. La Rochelle made a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes. They never really got a foothold in the Leinster half, apart from towards the end of the first half. But what I would be worried about if you're a Leinster fan is, and this is going to happen if they play Toulouse in the final, or you know, you'd even say Quins in the final. If they get there, that they have, they do concede a lot of penalties at scrum time, just like Ireland. And I do think that's potentially going to be their Achilles heel. They didn't make very many mistakes in their own half, Leinster. They were very efficient. They cleared the lines really efficiently. And that's probably that was the big difference. La Rochelle made too many mistakes in their own half. Leinster capitalised, took the points as well. They put some points on the board early, got into a lead, then went for it. So that's going to be the interesting thing to see in those semi-finals. Russ, you very kindly just brought to my attention some breaking news as we're recording this evening. Would you like to share it with the group?
Yeah, Arjen has just pointed. I've just tweeted out that Cicino has joined them, Santiago. So, I mean, my initial reaction is I really like him, big fan. But if we've got Seb Blake, McGuigan, Singleton coming,
Singleton's going to come back. Yeah,
one, you know, at least one of them was going to move on to pastures new, weren't they? There's a lot of there's a lot of money invested in that one particular position, and you were never going to keep all of them happy. So I've always liked what he's done for us, but it's not like we're in a weakened point there. And I think it's testament to how much Seb Blake has come along and developed that, you know, we were able to let him go. And I don't begrudge, it is at the stage of his career, I don't begrudge him going off to earn a decent wedge in France probably, and keep game time, because he is a very good player.
Yeah, so they've announced on a 3-year deal, looking at the graphic I've just seen from your tweet that you've shared. And yeah, it's sad because, you know, I like him. I think he's a great player. He's done a great job for Gloucester. But as you say, unlike Leinster, you can't keep them all.
I can't separate them, really. They all offer slightly different things.
But yeah.
McGuigan's been brilliant when he's played. Unfortunately, he had his injury. Singleton, I mean, ironically, we let Singleton go because we had them all, and then we had a hooker injury crisis. But Singleton offers a lot, and Seb Blake's been superb since he's come along. I mean, you know, and he has developed, hasn't he? He's gone from well, he hits his man in the line out and he's solid in the scrum, to what he offered in the game against Leicester, ridiculous carries and offloads. So, you know, very promising player. Local, raised, brought up, you know, he ticks a lot of boxes.
I was going to say, that's the other thing as well. And I mean, suppose if your model, your business model, your how you want to develop as a team is to be, and Loz gets annoyed by it, and I get the point about he makes about, you know, we want a team full of asterisks, an academy, denoting camp, academy product, you've got to let those players develop. If they're good enough, I mean, they have to be good enough, but if they're good enough, you've got to let them develop. And that does mean some of those sort of fan favourites and those players that we brought in may go, you know, they're going to go at the end of the day.
Yeah, and it's a hooker. You only need two hookers in a squad, don't you? So there's not a lot of space in that position.
Yeah.
And to be fair, like you said, Seb, yeah, local lad, but he's taken his chances, and it shows... he's a testament to a lot of young players coming through. You don't get many opportunities, but if you take them, they're there. And he has taken it, hasn't he? He had last year, really stepped up, and he stepped up again this year when he needed to. So,
yeah,
you know, yeah, very sad to see him go. I always liked Cicino, thought he offered a lot, but fully understand why he's going to go on elsewhere. It's not an annoying, it's an understandable loss, isn't it? From all sides. I can see it from Gloucester's view where we had to let him go. I can see from his side why he'd want to move on.
Yeah. And also, it doesn't preclude the possibility, quite of legitimate possibility, that we've offered him a contract and just Arjen have offered something different or better. You know, that's something we just always should bear in mind. Just and because again, he's gone somewhere else doesn't necessarily mean we haven't offered something.
And it falls back on the salary cap situation there,
exactly.
You got four hookers, you're gonna have to offer them a bit less than you'd probably like. Arjen haven't got that issue, have they?
No.
As much. They can go, well, here's a bit more, and they'll know that as well. So
yeah. And also you know, it's a south of France.
Yeah, it's not a bad place.
Southwest of France, it's not worse. Not the worst place to be. But yeah, so that's a shame. But thank you very much for bringing us breaking news. I mean, it won't be breaking news when people listen to this, but it's breaking news when we're recording this. So, that was the sort of roundup of the Champions Cup. We rattled through that pretty quickly. Before we go on to the Gloucester game, we'll break in a minute. But before we go on to the Gloucester game, we will talk about the other quarterfinals in the Challenge Cup. Now, I'll be honest, I didn't watch a lot of rugby at the weekend. I didn't watch any of the Gloucester game live, and that's why you're coming. That's why you're needed here tonight. The one I did, some of the rugby I did watch was Benetton versus Connacht, and you know, we knew beforehand that Benetton probably were the favourites, and I think we've been kind of very consistent about this. Benetton are going to be a very difficult side to beat. They are basically the Italian side minus four or five players. They play a very attacking brand of rugby. They're very exciting. Lots of offloads. Their back row are incredibly combative. They win a lot of turnovers. So it's going to be that does unfortunately suggest to me that we're not going to probably see a huge amount of running rugby from Gloucester. Because if you're looking at it sensibly and you want to avoid those turnovers, you're going to kick it.
Yeah, but we saw... I'll come on to a bit about the kicking more from us later. And I don't mind us playing a game plan that is aware of the strengths of the opposition. What I sometimes wish we'd do more is play to our strengths a little bit as well.
Impose our own.
And this is not a general Skivs criticism. This is Gloucester generally. I always remember Will Greenwood did a talk once before the Munster game, and it was one of the most interesting answers. Someone said to him, well, how do you prepare for a team that's really good at doing something and you don't know if you can stop it? And he made a really good point. He's like, well, when we were England, and I know this is an extreme, he was like, when we were winning, we just remembered what we were really good at, and we just focused on our strengths and hoped that was better than theirs. And I sometimes wish there was an element of that. And I think that's an English issue in general. Too often, I think people worry about what the opposition are bringing. And you've got to be very careful of what Benetton can do. But at the same time, we've got to play it right. And I just hope we're not so negative that we don't offer something. I didn't see much of the game, but like you said, they're a very impressive side. Probably the easiest semi-final we could have had, but that's not any disrespect to them, because they are a very good side.
It's because you're talking about Clermont Sharks and Benetton. It's weird, isn't it? Because you'd look at it and go, we've got an Italian team in the semi-final. Historically, you'd be jumping for joy and you'd be booking, you know, we were chatting on the group chat earlier about, you know, tentatively booking or reserving hotels in London and stuff, and the exorbitant prices of those hotels. But if it, you know, in days gone by, you get an Italian team in the semi-final, regardless of how well that side's done to get there, you'd be right. Well, right. What are the train times from Gloucester to London? But it's not the same anymore. You know, we've kind of made the point over the last year that Italian rugby, with the World Cup aberration aside, is really in a good place. It's improving every year. And, you know, it's going to be a really difficult game. It's going to be a really difficult match to win.
100% agree. It's, you know, we're talking... And yeah, we all know how much Italy have kicked on, and the club rugby has been a big part in that. And they've achieved some good results over the last few years. And it's a tough fixture for us. And at this stage of the competition, there was not going to be any easy games.
You're going to have to beat the best teams in the competition now, by rights of being in the semi-final. One thing we have to say, though, it's at King's Home, and you can't ask for anything more. You know, you're going into a semi-final. It's at home. You've just got to embrace that and really go with the fact that we've got that massive home advantage. The ticket prices have come out today, and it's £15 again for the season ticket holders who've renewed. I think it was something like £25 for those who haven't renewed yet. But if you renew, you can benefit from the scheme going forward. And I think even just the normal prices are reduced on the normal prices for a semi-final or for a big game. So it does give people, what we've got, 2 and a bit weeks before the game, an opportunity to get tickets. And I think you'd hope to think 3 o'clock on a Saturday, that's going to bring out the majority of supporters.
I mean, it's a good thing for most people, isn't it? Saturdays are always a bit more difficult for me because family commitments. I'll be honest, when the rest of you are all moaning, oh, it's on a bloody Friday night, that works out quite well for me because I can get a pass out. At the moment, when you're an idiot like me and you're off doing ultra marathons and a few other cycling events in the next few weeks, I'm not sure I can push my luck for a Saturday fixture, but we'll see. I think, you know, Saturday fixture at 3, I fully get, though, why it's the best for most people, and hopefully it will be a sellout. I did see one comment that was like, oh, the trouble with a Friday is you get more drunken idiots who aren't real fans going, which I thought was a bit much.
I think this idea of real supporters can get in the bin, to be honest.
I'm pleased for the majority of season ticket holders who have had their fixtures, you know, kicked all over the place. Your season ticket holders are the people who suffer the most for the television deals, aren't they? And they are a cool fan base. There's no getting away from that. They're in for the whole season, aren't they? But I think, you know, it doesn't mean that people like me don't want to come along. I've said before, when life settles down and the opportunity affords it, I'm hoping I can be a season ticket holder. I'm hoping I can have a plus one come along with me. So I just wish sometimes it's one of those rugby values ones that I find a bit tiresome. We need to, rugby is in a position where there's a reason why every game is going to be on telly next year, because it's a cheap, you don't want, you in some ways you don't want that, do you? You want it to be that, you know, it costs TV deals of money. So rugby has to look after itself more. So
yeah,
we need to do away with this snobbery of real fans a little, but that's an aside. But the club have done the right thing by making it affordable. Credit to NRG. They know that if you make the ground full noise, get the atmosphere, that's massive tick in our favour, isn't it? It does make it that little bit harder.
Yeah.
It'll be an interesting game, I think. It's going to be tough. I think it's going to be, it's a step up from Ospreys again.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll come on to Ospreys shortly. The other quarterfinals, I should say, as you mentioned earlier, Sharks beat Edinburgh in a quite close affair. And Claremont, I think Claremont hammered whoever they were playing. I can't remember who they were playing now, but Claremont absolutely hammered somebody.
Yeah.
But again, it's interesting because when we played Claremont earlier in the season, I think we were all, I'm not saying we were disappointed, but I think we were a bit frustrated that it wasn't quite the same Claremont. It's Ulster they hammered. Ulster, it wasn't the same Claremont that we're kind of used to seeing, you know, that exuberant, exciting team full of colour and panache. And it was a bit of a dull game against them. I mean, the Gloucester won comfortably in their pool stage. So I'm assuming you'd think that if they turn up on the day. They've got to go to Quins, so that's other semi-finals at Harlequins, so they're not having to go to South Africa, which is a massive improvement for them. And you'd fancy them then, really. The fact that you don't have to travel all the way down to South Africa and deal with all that nonsense.
The Sharks are a good team, very good pack, very good scrum. I don't know much about Claremont now, but then, you know, people who do tell me they're not the side they were, but they're still good. I'm not sure who you prefer. I think Sharks would be quite a tough.
I don't like the look of their pack.
Yeah, their pack is ridiculous. Their
Oxenchey, Coke, is it Cock? Etzebet, Venter, Buthelezi. I really don't want to be.
You know,
even their backs look half decent. Jesus.
We're not good against big physical packs at the moment, are we?
Jesus. I can't see
if they turn up full noise in the mood. I can't see Claremont doing them based on what I saw Claremont against us. But I don't. Claremont won't be an easy game, and you know I'm trying not to spoil a point I want to make in the Gloucester thing.
Yes, fine.
There's three to get to the fine to win this. We've got to beat a very good Benetton side and one of a very good Claremont, very good Shark side. Sorry,
yeah.
You know, and that's what you'd expect at a semi-final point. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly that. Right, we will now pause and move on to the Ospreys game. And Russ is going to enlighten us all, including me.
I have watched
the highlights, I should say. I've watched the extended highlights. But we'll come back and talk about that.
Hi, this is Chris Harris, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Right. Let's talk about the quarterfinal against Ospreys. So, full disclosure, as I've already mentioned, I was in Dublin. I missed the entire game, and I was getting updates from the lads on the WhatsApp group. Russ, feel free, just crack on, say your piece.
I'm trying to be diplomatic because I think I might rub a lot of people up the wrong way because I put a tweet up about what I thought, and I'm probably not on the same page as a lot of Gloucester fans here, and I don't want to take anything away from the performance, so hopefully I can articulate where I'm coming from, because I know I think if we I'm just trying to contextualize this, I think Lawrence is the most frustrated out of all of us at the game plan isn't yes. he? He is. I think he's pretty gone. I think he is not convinced by the coaches and the regime. Snowy is very set on his opinion that our game plan is terrible. He doesn't like it, but he's happy when we win.
Yeah.
Jim is a typical shed, happy clapper, got the slightly one eye. But, you know, Jim, like, you know, and I don't mean that disparagingly.
No,
Jim,
no, no Jim, we all know what
Jim
you mean.
Is probably the complete antithesis of where Loz is at. I think I like to think I'm a cynical optimist, is how I've always described myself in life. And it's a bloody hard place to be. So I really like when the club boy hook me, they hook me properly. But when I'm not sold, I'm a hard sell, if that makes sense. So
yep.
I was disappointed with the performance, but I was very, very glad we won and we got to a semi-final. As a lot of people pointed out, in your knockout rugby, the most important thing is winning, and people don't remember the performance. But there's a big but that I'll try and explain. The first half was very bitty.
Yeah.
A bit all over the place. The fact that I don't remember much about the game, and it was only Friday, and I didn't drink much because I was doing an event. So it's not down to alcohol, unlike some, Mr. 10 Pints over here. it's not down to that. There wasn't a lot of standout. There were some good, solid performances. The first half was very bitty, though, and we got punished by an aimless kick.
Yeah.
And Nate Ospreay scored a very good try. And that is what worries me about not playing to our strengths against Benetton. If we don't kick right, we'll be punished for it. And the concern, a friend of all of us, I won't name him, but he'll know who he is if he listens to this. It always makes a point to me that he doesn't have a problem with, it's not so much the game plan, sometimes it's the execution.
Yeah.
And I would agree with that. And I don't think we executed very well the first half. And when we did, we got punished for it. There were some good moments. I think it happened in the first half. And the one that really frustrates me was we won a very good, hard fought turnover. And rather than do anything with it, we box kicked it.
Yeah.
It's free ball. Literally nothing to lose by having a go. They're probably all over the place. Run it back. But no, we box kicked. And so the first half was very bitty with very controlled. The second half is where I think I'm at odds with what a lot of other people said. Lots of people said we dominated, we never let Ospreys into the game, and we controlled it very well. Positives, we did control it very well. We dominated. Lineout was really good. Scrum was superb. But I didn't see anything that inspired me. You know, I think against a better side, we would have been stretched a lot more. And yes, the result is the most important thing in knockout rugby. And we took point. What I did like, we took points when they were there. You know, there's lots of it where you're like, if you'd have carried this into the league, we'd probably be able to compete a bit more in the league.
That frustration.
And that frustration. And I get a bit annoyed when people say we have to forget about the league. You can't just send the kids out in the league. Rugby is about a momentum sport. And me and you disagreed on picking Hastings because I think you need to keep a solid 10. And this was not a reflection of Hastings. You played very well and did a superb bit of skill that is quite rightly all over the place. So it took a while to figure it out, but I watched it the first time.
I couldn't work out quite what he'd done. I mean, it would have been slightly more impressive if it led to something, but you know, that's a...
Also, why the flanker didn't smash him so he didn't do it again. Now, that's the forward in me's thinking, but yeah.
Rugby's changed a little bit, Russ,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. But you have to build momentum. And I just think, had Ospreys had a bit more, I don't think we'd have dominated as much. That was my argument. Loads of people are like, oh, we really dominate. And we did. But it never looked like we were going to run away with it.
So I'm going to cut in now because I watched the extended highlights. No, I watched the extended highlights, and I've then kind of gone back and like skipped through bits and pieces on the TNT playback. You're exactly right. So The second half, there was far more control. We pinned Ospreys back. We didn't really give them any opportunities. We didn't make many mistakes in defence. And when we did make a mistake, we didn't, because the killer is always, you make one mistake and then you compound it and compound it and compound it. How many times have we seen this season, in particularly Gloucester, give a penalty away around 22 and 3 minutes later they're under the post because we've given another penalty and a maul and then away we go. Gloucester didn't do that, which is why that, as you say, the Ospreys didn't get the opportunity to punish any small mistakes we made. The other aspect, you're entirely right, is didn't feel like we were going to create a huge amount. Now, we've got to give, I think in that case, you've got to give the Ospreys defence a bit of credit because they did, I thought they did very well in managing our centres and making sure that we did actually have to come back inside and kick a bit more than probably we wanted to. But that's my only concern is that should there be a way, another way of playing that allows us to beat that defensive structure? You'd hope to think that we would have that in our locker, but I don't know. It's so difficult because you said it's cup rugby. It's about winning. It's about getting through. There was an interesting point. Somebody responded to something we put on Twitter earlier, which was how do you play it? Because obviously we've got two league games between now and the semi-final. Saracens away and Exeter at home. I think that's right. And
yeah,
the concern there is, you've got to obviously manage the squad. Look, the biggest game of the season now is the semi-final, and then fingers crossed there's a bigger game after that. But you don't want to go into that semi-final with players who have been rested too much and are a bit ring rusty. They've still got to have game time. They've still got to be in getting those combinations together. So Skivington almost has to have in his mind, right, this is the squad ideally I want to go into that semi-final with. How do I manage the squad as it is to get the best out of those players?
Yeah. And I think there's a balance. And that was, when we were back and forthing on WhatsApp, full disclosure, I was frustrated that Charlie Atkinson didn't get a run out because I thought he had a good game the other week. And I think 10 is a position where you need a bit of stability. And I'd like to have seen him play. None of this is a reflection on Hastings, who I think when he's fit and in form is a very good player. I just thought it was wrong to bring him in cold. He hasn't played for 8 weeks and I think he looked out of sorts, but he had glimpses of what he could do. I would have liked to seen him come on and be eased back. And that's the balance Skibbs has got to get right. And I think he needs a cut. If you're going to start him against Benetton, which if he's in form is the right thing to do, he looked like he needed a bit more shaking off that ring rust. But like you said, Ed, it's that balance. I hope the club is sensible. Anyone with any sort of knocks, niggles, sounds like Fawley had quite a few niggles and he was rested quite rightly. So that's the balance they've got to have. Don't risk anyone. But at the same time, rugby's a momentum sport, isn't it? It's not like football where you can change en masse and be okay about it. You kind of have to have your combinations is a cliche in rugby, but you've got to have that, haven't you? You combine your 9 and 10 working well together.
8, 9, 10 really, isn't it? I mean, that's the key. I think also increasingly having that 15-10 connection as well.
And so there are players who you need to have. It sounds like Mercer was ill, so hopefully he's going to have a rest. I don't think he was fully fit. They talked about it in commentary. He'd been sick all week and he still played quite well. Mm. And, you're right. The defence was superb. I thought our defence and our organisation and control was really good. My counter was that was the stuff I would expect of a team in the semi-final. And I hope they've got to try a bit now in the next few weeks. And you can't just send the kids out though against the teams we're playing because we'll get murdered.
Oh yeah, if you play, you put a second string side out against Saracens, who are going for top four, that's a bloodbath waiting to happen. And we've done it before, and it's exactly what happened.
And what do we gain from it? People joke about sending the shags out and sending your second. There's no point. Those lads, what do the young lads get out of it other than an ass kicking? What do they learn or gain from that, other than, oh, Mario Otoji's just smashed his way through us four or five times because it's not a fair fight? How, what do they actually learn from that that they couldn't learn from watching a video of a site? Do you know what I mean? So there's a balance, isn't there? So I hope it's a case of resting those who need a rest, sharpening those who need a sharpening up and a tuning and get the balance right. But you cannot go with a full load of young lads. And there are... And you have to take that risk, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, right? Northampton are in a very different space to Gloucester at the moment, but Northampton are going for a league title. They're trying to get top home semi-final and playoff, and they're trying to get the win the Champions Cup. They're not going to be able to... They're not in a position where they can rest players. They're going to have to go full bore. So you've got to think of it, look, going forward, if we want to be in a position like Northampton are at the moment, which is latter stages of the proper European competition and competing for a top four finish, that's where we're going to have to be. We're going to have to be putting our best players out week in, week out.
And we've got to start preparing for next season. And let's be honest, next season, I don't want us to just be a cup side.
No.
We can't progress like that. And we were both at the Aki Cup curry night, and they were, the club said, oh, we're a very good cup side. Yes, we are, but we now need to become a good side generally. The club need to start figuring out what is it about cup rugby that we thrive on, and how do we translate that to a league performance. And it's not the free hit we think it is, I don't think, because we need to hit the ground running next year. We all know our start to the season pretty much killed our season before it began. We can't have another season like that. Skivs has bought himself some time with the Premiership Cup. I don't think winning the Premiership Cup on his own is enough. I think we have to win.
I think a final would be a significant achievement. Yeah. A win, obviously, that puts it in a different...
Yeah, I'll amend that. Yeah, it's not just winning it. If we win it, we have to be a very good side.
In
Sharks or Clermont. It's another step up. We have to get to the final, but we can't bet the house on just that one game. We've got to build for next year. He will rightly be here next year regardless, but what level of pressure depends on what happens in Europe. But he's got to start getting the side ready, and we've made some good signings for next year. I feel quite good about the team on paper next year, but they've got to start translating performances. We've got to deliver next year. There's no hiding place next year.
It's got to be top six. I mean, I think top four might be, you've got to be realistic. Top four would be a stretch because you don't see teams moving from ninth to top four very often. But
and we've rattled off Saracens, Exeter, Northampton, Quinns, who are very good, Leicester.
We've not even talked about Bath, who are obviously doing very well this season in the league. So, all those teams that are going to be challenging brought in players themselves. So yeah, it's going to be a challenge. Thank you for that, Russ. I do appreciate your review of the game, and very much appreciated. One thing I would say is last week was weirdly, and it never really occurred to me before, two anniversaries of two almost mythical Gloucester wins. And Russ, I think you were there for both of them. I think you and I share something in the Bath game as one of the sort of, I know that was a reintroduction into rugby for you, and it was the introduction to rugby for me. And we're talking, of course, about the 16-10 game. We've talked about it before, and I'm never going to get bored about talking about it. But there was also an anniversary of the Gloucester-Leicester game, which was the Phil Greening try in the corner, Mark Mapletoff conversion from the touchline, which it's weird, isn't it, how your brain works. I didn't realize that was literally the year after.
Yeah, and it's
weird,
a very similar circumstance, wasn't it?
Yeah,
us win that game, I don't remember as well. The Bath game will always be very special to a lot of fans. It's special for me, as you alluded to. Most people know my dad committed suicide when I was young. Because of that, I stopped going to rugby for a while. It was quite painful for me to go. It brought back a lot of memories. I went to rugby since I was six with dad. No one else in my family went, so it was my thing with my dad. So I kind of lost my way for a while. It was hard to go. I can't even remember why I went. I think my cousin Craig dragged me along. I'd started playing rugby for Brockworth. He dragged me along to Bristol because he had a spare ticket. Must win game. We had to win both.
Yeah.
The only thing I remember of that game is the Arwell Thomas dropout. Which
if you,
the,
you the can only, actually, yeah, you can actually see it on YouTube.
It's the only 22 dropout I've seen that ended up going backwards. It was that bad. And I, you know, he was a good player. So dragged a lot of Bath game, and the atmosphere was amazing. And it was, you know, I was hooked again. It was a very emotional night for me because it's the sort of night my dad brought me up on the values of what it meant to be Gloucester. And, you know, my abiding memory from that game, not to just make it this big emotional journey, I know that was my abiding memory was I was in the Tumpen because that was the only place they had tickets for at that time. My biggest memory was we were surrounded by a load of Bath fans, and there was a scrum right in front of us, and Fids just stood up and just waved his hands and G'd the crowd into doing the Gloucester chant, and these Bath fans were like, oh, that's very what does that achieve? And Rob Fidler looked like he was going to murder somebody. And it was one of those moments where you suddenly got what a connection you had with those players back then. I think that was the one, looking back on it, when they did, it was the first ever run past the shed, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it was the one where Barnsley turned to Andy Robertson and went, we've lost this one, before the game even began, because Richard Hill said to him, go out and see what it means to the fans. And it was, that was what Bath, for all their money, lacked, was that connection of the players to the club. And, you know, you could just see the boys were going to die for the club that night. And yeah, very special game. Always, always grateful. It's my favourite result as a Gloucester fan. I don't think any game will ever trump that, for just when Paul Holford scored in the corner and just the pure joy of it.
The remarkable thing about that game is, and again, you have your brain plays tricks on you, is I'd forgot that the Paul Holford try was really early on in the game.
It was,
And I had it in my head. It's weird, again, you might have had it in my head. It was kind of late in the game. But the whole experience for so many Gloucester supporters of our generation, and I hate using that word, but our sort of generation who were brought up in that cusp between amateur and professionalism, and those early days of professionalism, that game is so, so fundamental and so important to the history of the rugby club. Because, yes, we eventually learned that relegation wouldn't happen. But if you actually read the news reports of that game, the first line in a lot of those news reports is, as the RFU have confirmed this week, relegation will occur, Gloucester knew that they needed to win this game. Now, you sort of think, you put that into perspective and you think about the history and the pressure and the total uncertainty around what was going to happen to this game as we moved into professionalism proper. And the thought of Gloucester being relegated, what would that mean in terms of money, in terms of players, and who we could bring along, all this sort of stuff. And a proud rugby city against a team that we joke about, that they haven't won anything really since, because they couldn't cheat. You know, there's a lot of the antagonistic sort of behaviour from a lot of Gloucester supporters to past supporters comes from that time. This is the whole thing. It's people don't necessarily realize why there is this rivalry with this team down the A46. There is the reason why is because of the basically downright cheating that was going on in the 80s and 90s by Bath and others, but by Bath. And that sort of, you took that, taking that against the Gloucester ethos, which was, we do not pay players. Other people might do, but we don't. You know, we are a group of local working class lads who, you know, maybe working class or not working class, but local lads who play for their fans and for their crowd. And it meant everything. And then you go a year later and you had the Leicester side, you know, Joel Stransky, World Cup winner, we're now into professionalism at this point. And that game, for me, it's not quite the same level, because that Bath game was just a different level above entirely. But the Leicester game, the week after, it was the Wednesday night or whatever it was, after we played them in the semi-final and got a bit bulldozed by them at home. And we then played them on that Wednesday night and went toe-to-toe, played a team that narrowly missed out on winning the Premiership or champ, or the first division as it was then. And again, it's one of those, you look at the teams that night and you think, you said before, Russ, about how players of other sides, Bath particularly, struggle to understand how a Gloucester team made up of a bunch of lads from Matson and Coney Hill and Treadworth and Long Levens could beat these international stars. And you're like, you think to yourself, how the bloody hell did we win that? I mean, is incredible.
While you were doing incredible. That, like, just go back to the Bath game. I realised you talk about memory. It wasn't Fids. Fids didn't play in that game. So it must have been Simsy. But the thing you forget is we had a bloody good team in the 90s. But I'm looking at the team sheet. It was nowhere near our full strength team. You had Tim Smith, Holford, Cummings, Roberts, Osborne, Kimber and Benton. So Martin Kimber at 10, you know, that was not a full strength back line. The pack was Window, Hawker, Bullock, Miles, Sims, Stanley, Raymond, Smith. It was nowhere near the best Gloucester could put out at that time. And the Bath team is apt, you know, Lunsdon, John Slidehome, Phil de Glanville, Mike Catt, Adebayo, Butland and Nicol in the backs. Their back row was Ben Clark, Eric Peters and Robinson, with and the Leicester game, is the same, Ed. And
it's just crazy. I'm just looking at their pack is absolutely mental. Graham Rowntree, Richard Cockrell, Darren Garforth, Martin Johnson, Paul Miller, Dean Richards, and Neil Back.
Yeah,
and our pack was Tony Window, Phil Greening, Andy Deacon, Rob Fiddler, Dave Sims, Stanley Devereaux Carter. Ridiculous.
They were a great, they not a full strength side at any stretch of imagination. Good players, but they had to absolutely up their game. And I moan about, I think people moan, what I love is people moan about how like now is like the worst they've ever seen us play, etc. I've never got that bad because, like you said, we've never been as close to relegation as we have around that time. The missed conversion by Stimpson aside, but that was like 3 or 4 years on the bounce, wasn't it? Where
the 96-97 season, which was the following season, the Leicester result, we finished mid-table, but then we were kind of drifting in that sort of 7th to 10th. But you've got to remember as well at this time, there were a lot of no-mop teams sort of milling around there. You know, you had the likes of Rotherham and West Hartlepool and people like that. And we still went away and lost to bloody West Hartlepool. So I think that we did hold it was something crazy. Like we were the last team for something like 4 years that West Hartlepool beat.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
You've got to remember, there were some bloody dark days watching Gloucester away particularly.
But what you never could take away from the guys was what it meant to them. And it's a different era now, isn't it? I don't want to be one of the, you have to, professionalism is a very different thing, isn't it? A lot of those guys were playing because they loved the game. And that was it. You know, they didn't want to need to be paid. You know, they just loved doing it. And rugby's very different now. And I'm not, you know, completely recognize that. But that ethos is still there in the fans, isn't it? And that's why people like Jamal Ford Robinson are still so loved. It's why, you know, people recognize those people who are enjoying it and doing their all week in, week out, and just holding their head up. And that connection is still very important as a club. And I think, like you said, games like that Bath game, that's what kind of instilled it in people. it's that famous Fanaloa quote, wasn't it? Where, you know, he's like, if you're not giving your all, you'll be found out very quickly. And
but if you do give your all, they'll love you for love it, you. and they'll find that out very quickly as well.
And it's the thing, isn't it? You go back, like you said, Lawrence moans about the asterisks, and I understand where he's coming from, and I like local town, but some of our most loved players aren't from Gloucester. Simpson Daniel wasn't. Terry Fanaloa certainly wasn't.
Junior.
And the team now.
Ollie. You're going to reel them off for me.
We all love Santi, what player he is, and you can see he gives his all. And you know that it's still the same now, isn't it? If you see a player working his arse off, giving his all, Jamal. I'd put Balmain in that level.
I mean, even Lewis Ludlow. I mean, fair play. Or Billy Twelvetrees. They're not Gloucester lads.
And Mercer, I think, to a point as well, recently shows just you give your all and the fans will back you. Ruin is probably another real good example of that. But we do love a local lad, don't we? So, you know, that's important as well. But it's just that seeing people try. And yeah, that game will always, you know, they're both very special games. The Bath game, obviously, very big connection for me. Got me back playing. Got me back watching. I think I got renewed my season ticket pretty much. Bought my season ticket again in the very first, you know, literally as soon as I had the money after that. And I know a lot of people, you know, it's like they said when they tweeted it, some games you just need to put a score up and everyone knows, you know. Yeah. You don't even need to put the date. You just Gloucester 16, Bath 10, and everyone knows what game you mean.
To be honest, you don't even have to put the names of the teams. No. You say 16-10 to a group of people our age and a bit older and everyone knows what we're talking about. Everyone knows what we're talking about. Right, on that slightly cheery note, I think. And maybe cherry and white tinted note. We'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Russ. Really appreciate your time again. We will be chatting next week about the Saracens game. God knows what that's going to end up being like. Very much kind of apt bear in our discussion this evening. And then just cracking on and building up to that semi-final in a couple of weeks' time with the next few games. But thank you very much. Have a good evening, and we'll speak soon.
Cheers.
Cheers.